This is The Investigator.
Hello?
Hello, this is Mike Garson. I've got to talk to you.
Mike, my plane leaves in 30 minutes.
I'm in the lobby.
Mike, we went all over it this afternoon.
Just give me 5 minutes.
No use, Mike. I'm going through with it. I thought I'd made that pretty clear.
I met with the committee after I left you.
Oh?
They asked me to see you again.
It won't do any good. Goodbye, Mike.
No, wait, don't hang up. Look, we can't talk over the phone. Let me come up.
I'm leaving for the airport.
I'll ride out there with you.
Mike, what's the use? Oh, all right. Meet me out front.
You've got to call off the hearing.
It's too late now, even if I wanted to. You saw the spread it got in the paper?
You can dream up an excuse. You're an expert at it. A postponement, illness, anything.
Save your breath, Mike.
You realize what'll happen if you get yourself out in a limb?
I've been out there before. Way out.
Well, this time the committee won't go along with you.
I run the committee. It doesn't run me.
Do you run the party, too? One more error and they'll let you have it.
You're a smart politician, Mike, but you've guessed wrong before.
I'm not guessing. I'm warning you. I'm speaking for the party now. You're going too far.
I've heard that before.
This time it isn't just some crackpot college pinko or some lousy departmental assistant. This man is too big.
No one is too big. There's no one so high or so low as to make him immune to investigation where there's the slightest trace of evidence that his actions or beliefs are detrimental to the interests of this country. You can't stop me. The committee can't stop me. The whole party can't stop me. Nothing can stop me. Oh, stewardess.
I'll be with you in a moment, sir. Fasten your safety belt, please. Fasten your safety belt.
Your attention, please. This is Captain Jarvis, chief pilot, speaking. We have developed some trouble in one of our starboard motors, but there is no cause for alarm. However, we are bucking severe headwinds and having difficulty maintaining altitude. I have decided to turn back rather than continue with one motor not functioning. Thank you.
Oh, miss.
Yes, sir.
I must send a wire.
You'll have time to do that at the terminal, sir.
Oh, that'll be too late. I'll write out my message and you ask the pilot to radio it back to the terminal and ask them to send it.
I'm afraid that's impossible. No personal...
You know who I am?
Yes, sir, but no exceptions.
What is your name?
I'm Miss Davidson.
This message concerns an investigation I'm conducting. It is of the utmost urgency.
Well, I don't doubt that,
sir. You acknowledge the importance of my message, and yet you refuse to convey my message to the pilot.
It won't do any good, sir.
You realize that only one interpretation can be put upon your refusal, Miss Davidson.
I'm very sorry, sir.
Seems to me that you're deliberately obstructing an official investigation that is of vital concern to every loyal citizen of this country.
No, sir, but the regulations...
Miss Davidson, your uncooperative attitude can only cast the gravest doubts on your own loyalty, Miss Davidson.
I'm only doing my job. I'll speak to the pilot if you
will. We're on fire!
Good day, sir. My name is Martin, Inspector Martin of the Immigration Service.
Immigration? I don't understand. Where am I?
It's quite all right, sir. You're safe now.
Where are we? I don't seem to remember.
You'll be all right in a moment. You had a nasty shock.
The plane. Did we crash?
Yes, you crashed.
Oh, I'm alive. I've got to send a wire.
Well, there's no need for that now, sir.
This is very important. Where's the phone I can use?
There's no phone, sir.
Oh, there must be a phone around here somewhere. What is this dump, anyway? I can't see anything. It's so foggy.
The fog will lift soon.
Where are the other passengers? How many survivors were there?
There were no survivors, sir.
You mean I'm the only one?
There were no survivors.
What are you talking about? Are you crazy? I'm here. I'm alive, aren't I? You know who I am?
Yes, sir. I know all about you. It would be a lot easier for you if you figure it out for yourself.
What's your name?
Inspector Martin of the Immigration Service.
All right, Martin. You say you know all about me. Then you must be aware of the importance of the work I'm engaged in. In view of this, your refusal to cooperate can only cast grave doubts on your motives. Now, you'll make things a lot easier on yourself if you answer my questions in a straightforward manner. Now then, I have been in a plane crash. I ask you where I am, how I got here, where the other passengers are. And you tell me there are no survivors. And you... I see.
Yes, and the fog has lifted, hasn't it?
But I had so much to do yet. All my plans.
I know how you feel, sir. Everybody feels like that at first, but you'll snap out of it. After all, you're one of the lucky ones. You're up here. Of course, you've only got a temporary visa, but I'm sure you won't have any trouble in getting a permanent visa at the main gate.
The main gate?
Yes.
It's about time, Martin.
Sorry I'm late, sir. I was delayed at the border.
You're always delayed at the border, Martin. Why don't you tell these immigrants where they are right off, instead of beating around the bush?
Well, I found it's better to break it gently. Regulations don't forbid it.
I know all about regulations. I've been gatekeeper for a long time. You young fellows think just because you've got civil service jobs, you can get away with anything. When I started in the immigration service, we had to keep on our toes, believe me. I don't know why I stay on this job. No efficiency, no cooperation. I ought to hand in my resignation. But I won't. I won't give some people the satisfaction.
Sir, I have an applicant here.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Here's the file, sir.
Applicant for permanent entry, 578293B021. Welcome, welcome.
My name is...
Yes, yes, I know who you are. It's all down here in the record. Now, if you'll just sign this...
What is this document?
Standard form, application for permanent entry. Sign right there.
There I am.
Fine. Martin will show you to your quarters.
This way, sir.
Just a minute. Why are we going this way? Isn't that the main gate over there?
Oh, you can't go through that yet.
Why not? I signed that document.
Well, that's just an application. Before you can go through the main gate, we've got to investigate you.
Investigate me?
You'll be investigated thoroughly by the Permanent Investigating Committee on Permanent Entry. I'm the chairman.
And what happens if I do not get a clean bill of health from this committee of yours?
In that case, it means deportation.
Deportation? To where?
Why, down there.
I want to state at this time, most emphatically, that I refuse to submit to any investigation by any committee whose members, for all I know, may be completely unqualified to pass judgment on me.
My good sir, are you questioning the integrity of my committee?
I make no allegations. I am making a statement on policy.
But you've got to be investigated.
I raise no objections to investigation. In fact, I welcome an investigation. My record is clean. Before I do so, however, I must be satisfied as to the competence of that body. If you will submit to me a list of the names of persons eligible to sit on this tribunal, together with a list of alternate nominees, I will inform you of my approval or disapproval in each individual case, and we can then determine the composition of the committee.
My dear sir, you can't select the committee that's going to investigate you. That's unheard of up here.
Well, it's not unheard of where I come from. I assure you that I have no wish to disrupt the work of your committee. I am merely making this request in order to provide a safeguard which will guarantee fair play and justice. Nor am I attempting in any way to put any pressure of any kind on either you or the members of your committee. However, may I point out that your refusal to even consider it might be construed wrongly and might lead to speculation that certain members of your committee fear that their impartiality might be challenged.
You're listening to a satirical play called The Investigator, first aired on CBC Radio in May 1954. I'm Michael Enright.
May we enter?
Why, certainly, certainly.
Forgive the intrusion. My companions and I come here on a matter of grave import.
Come right in.
My name, sir, is Oates, Titus Oates, Doctor of Philosophy.
Ah, this is a rare privilege. I've read about your career with great interest, Dr. Oates.
In a certain sense, we pursued the same line of endeavor as did my companions. May I present Torquemada, Inquisitor General of the Spanish Inquisition?
I am honored, sir.
I am very happy to make your acquaintance, Mr. Torquemada.
And this is another distinguished member of our profession, so to speak. Mr. Cotton Mather, formerly of Salem, Massachusetts.
I bid you welcome, sir.
Cotton Mather, well, this is a privilege.
And this gentleman is the distinguished jurist, Baron George Jeffreys.
How do you do, Judge?
Your servant, sir.
I see his lordship's name is not as familiar to you as that of Torquemada Mather. His lordship's fame would have been instantly known to you had I presented him as the hanging judge, formerly of the Bloody Assizes.
Oh, the hanging judge. Why, this is a pleasure. I should have remembered the name, Judge.
No need for apologies. So few people do.
The devil take you out, Simon, enough of your jibes. The fame of the Bloody Assizes will live long after your confounded popish plot will have been forgotten. miserable little sneak, informer.
You dare call me that? Butcher!
My friends, I beg of you. We shall be giving our new friend a false impression.
Up here, we live in peace and brotherly love.
Oh, don't apologize. You should hear what some of my pals used to call me. Well, I'm really flattered by this visit, gentlemen. Of course, I'm not really in yet. I understand I've got to be investigated first. I'd like to ask your advice. I raised a point with the gatekeeper.
The committee has already met in executive session, and your proposal has been rejected.
Ah, you seem to know a great deal about it.
That's hardly surprising, sir. We are on the committee.
You are?
We have served on it for a considerable length of time.
I assume there won't be any obstacles to my entry?
None whatever, sir. Your permanent entry is assured.
However, we merely serve in an advisory capacity.
The gatekeeper makes all final decisions.
We, of course, play no small part in influencing those decisions.
The gatekeeper has never, to my knowledge, used his veto.
And you gentlemen see eye to eye on most matters?
On all matters.
I don't want to embarrass you, but it does seem peculiar to find Titus Oates, an enemy of popery, in complete agreement with Torquemada, the founder of the Inquisition.
Your point's well taken, sir, but up here, one's perspective changes. We rise above our differences.
Say rather that we have submerged our differences in the face of a treacherous and powerful enemy.
And that enemy is?
Down there.
Ah, I see. A foreign power.
It is our high purpose to awaken the apathetic multitude to the imminent danger of an attack from within by this foreign power, which has never renounced its goal of complete domination.
But how have these subversive elements managed to enter? Who is responsible?
The gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper?
In my considered opinion, speaking as one trained in jurisprudence, the evidence is overwhelming.
Then why is he being permitted to remain in his present high position of trust?
For some time now, we have been considering ways and means of exposing the gatekeeper and forcing his resignation. We've hesitated to do so until a man could be found to take his place. Your arrival at this time is most opportune.
Gentlemen, surely you don't mean...
There is no doubt you are the man.
I am honored. But I am, after all, a newcomer. Surely one of you would be better qualified. You're familiar with the local political situation. You've studied the available evidence.
One factor outweighs all other considerations. In you, we have a man who can bring to the committee's work the latest inquisitorial techniques.
Gentlemen, I cannot find the words to express my feelings of humble gratitude at the signal honor you're conferring upon me.
Then you accept. In that case, we propose...
Just a minute, Judge. Seems to me this undertaking of ours is not without certain dangers.
We can expect to rouse some disapproval and even active opposition, but nothing so serious that we cannot cope with it.
I wasn't thinking of the lower levels of the administration, Mr. Mather. I was referring to...
You're concerned about the chief.
Frankly, yes.
You need have no fears on that score. The chief never interferes.
Rest assured, sir, we will have a free hand.
Then, in all humility, I dedicate myself to the task of bringing to light the facts of this monstrous conspiracy that threatens our way of life up here. And I shall not cease until I have fixed the blame for 1,000 years of treason.
The committee will come to order. We have before us an application for permanent entry. Is the applicant present?
I'm ready.
There are a number of rules governing the conduct of these hearings. It is our purpose on this committee.
On a point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Sir, I was about to inform
you
of the rules.
Sir, I believe my point of order takes precedence.
As I understand it, the point of order is usually raised in connection with procedure.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Since I have not yet informed you of the rules, I fail to see how a point of order...
Mr. Chairman, my point of order is not raised in connection with rules of procedure. It goes much deeper than that. The competency of this committee to conduct an investigation.
Sir, you have raised
the point... Please do not interrupt.
But the committee has already considered your proposal.
Mr. Chairman, I must insist that I be allowed to finish my point of order without interruption from the chair.
Oh, very well.
Today, I am prepared to bring specific charges concerning the fitness of a certain member of this committee to sit in judgment upon me or any applicant.
That is a very serious charge.
Mr. Chairman, may I suggest you ask me against whom these charges are being preferred?
Yes, I was about to do so. Against whom are you preferring these charges?
I bring these charges, which have proven, and I have no doubt that they will be fully substantiated, in which event the member of the committee who has been found to be derelict in his duty should be removed from this committee. I think you'll agree to that, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Any member who's been proven to be unfit to serve on this committee will not be allowed to continue to sit upon it. But will you please state against whom you are bringing these charges?
Against the chairman of this committee, the gatekeeper.
You charge me with unfitness? That is preposterous.
Chairman.
It's ridiculous. It's completely
out of order. Mr. Chairman.
The advocate will be seated, and the hearing in his case will proceed.
Mr. Chairman.
You are out of order.
Mr. Chairman.
You are out of order.
Mr. Chairman, I cannot accept that ruling. You stated just now, did you not, that any member of the committee who is proven to be unfit will be removed?
Yes, I did. However...
Your statement carried the clear implication that charges of such a nature, in order to be proven or disproven, must first be fully heard.
Yes, in
the sense... And yet, when you learn that these charges are directed against yourself, you refuse arbitrarily to even hear these charges. Now, I ask you, sir, was your first statement a true statement of the position of this committee with respect to the airing of charges of unfitness in connection with any member and his consequent removal from this committee in the event such charges were found to be true? And if it is true, then is your second statement to the effect that I am out of order in preferring charges against you consistent with the first statement alluded to? Or did you mean in your earlier statement to exclude yourself from the category of members against whom charges can be preferred? And if that was the meaning of the statement, upon what precedent do you base such a flagrantly improper ruling?
Well, I don't follow your question.
Oh, now, come, you know that's a perfectly simple question.
The first statement?
Or were you lying?
How dare you accuse me of lying?
Then it was true.
It most certainly was.
Then how do you reconcile it with your present position?
I merely stated...
You must realize that it cannot be reconciled, unless, of course, you are deliberately creating a false impression.
I deny that. I was stating the truth.
I'm glad to hear you so positive about it. If, as you say, you are telling the truth, then you do not, in fact, you cannot refuse to consider charges against any member of this committee, including yourself. Are you refusing now to allow me to air these charges?
No, of course not. That would not be consistent. I concede that. But I am objecting on grounds of proper procedure. I am the chairman of this committee. You now propose to investigate me. Clearly, as long as I am in the chair, it would be most improper.
I agree completely.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Dr. Oates?
May I suggest that the matter would be expedited in the interests of propriety best served if you were to relinquish the chair temporarily while these charges are placed before the committee? Would this be satisfactory to the applicant?
I have no objection whatsoever.
Well, it's completely without precedent. However, if it will expedite matters... Dr. Oates, will you take the chair?
I shall consider it a privilege.
Most unusual.
You may proceed with your charges.
I wish to call as my first witness Inspector Martin of the Immigration Service. Inspector Martin, I have just a few questions. I'm sure you can answer them quite easily. Were you the officer who conducted me to the gatekeeper's office yesterday?
I was.
Isn't it a fact that the gatekeeper stated at that time that there was gross inefficiency in the immigration service?
Well, what he meant was...
I'm not asking you what he meant. Confine yourself to the facts. Is it a fact that he said there was gross inefficiency?
Well, yes, he did, but...
Those were his exact words. Gross inefficiency.
He did use those words,
in
but...
reference to the Immigration Service, of which he is the head.
Yes, but if I may say
There's no need for statements. Confine yourself to answering my questions. Now then, did he also make a statement at that time to the effect that the way things were going in the Immigration Service, you can get away with anything nowadays?
I think he said something like that.
You think? Isn't it a fact that those were his exact words? You can get away with anything.
Well, he may have...
Oh, come now, you're hedging, Martin. Did he say it or didn't he? Yes or no?
Yes, he used those words.
Did he also make a statement to the effect that he feels unable to cope with the disorganized state of the Immigration Service and that he felt he should hand in his resignation? Is that true?
Well, that's true to an extent.
To what extent? He complained about the disorganization of the service?
Yes.
And he made a statement about handing in his resignation?
Yes, he did.
Then your answer to my previous question, which was, that's true to an extent, was not a completely truthful answer.
Well, if you want to put it that way...
I am putting it that way. Your answer to my question as to what extent the statement I attributed to the gatekeeper is true should have been that it is entirely true.
Well, I suppose it should have been.
Then you were lying.
No, sir, I was not lying.
Not deliberately, Inspector. Let's say you're confused.
Yes, I suppose I was.
And reconsidering the question, then, and take all the time you want before you answer, you would say that it is entirely and completely true that the gatekeeper made all the statements attributed to him. Please answer the question.
Yes, 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 it is entirely true.
I'm Michael Enright, and this is Rewind here on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Radio 137. What you're listening to is a play called The Investigator that first aired in May of 1954 and is one of the legendary plays of the golden age of radio. Now, back to the hearings.
Sir, you've heard the testimony of the previous witness?
Yes.
Was his testimony true?
Well, I want to be fair to Inspector Martin.
I think up till now we've all been so.
I would say that his testimony is true insofar as the actual words I used. However, the intent...
I think the committee can draw its own conclusions as to the intent.
Well, that may be, sir, but the point is...
The point is that you actually used those words.
Well, yes, I must say I did.
Very well, then. If, as you admit, your department is grossly inefficient...
Well, I do not admit it.
Is it not possible that certain subversive individuals have managed to infiltrate up here by taking advantage of this laxness and gaining permanent entry?
That is absolutely impossible. I deny it.
You deny they have gained entry by taking advantage of your laxness? How, then, did these subversives gain entry?
Well, they got in... I deny that any subversive elements gained entry at all. I never said they did.
But if certain undesirable elements have infiltrated here, you admit the responsibility would be yours and yours alone.
Yes, it would. But I again deny that such a thing is possible. Every applicant must undergo the usual routine investigation.
Routine? Don't you think the applications of, let us say, of heretics, dissenters, rebels, many of them with prison records, should be given more than routine consideration?
Sir, I would
Don't you think you should have exercised the most careful vigilance in cases of this kind?
Sir, the only...
That you should have subjected such individuals to the most intensive scrutiny?
All our investigations follow the standard pattern. That is what I meant by routine.
In other words, you admit that cases of individuals most likely to be subversive up here were investigated with no more thoroughness than you would use in the case, say, of an applicant whose record was without a blemish.
I did not consider it necessary.
What was your motive in coddling known subversives?
There was no evidence that any of them were subversive.
You deny the possibility that a more complete investigation would have brought forth facts that would have possibly exposed their affiliations with a foreign power? Do you deny that possibility?
How can I answer?
Do you deny that possibility?
I cannot answer such a question. No one can.
Then you do not deny such a possibility.
Obviously, I cannot deny it. I neither deny it nor admit it.
Can you deny it?
No matter how many times you ask me that question, my answer must be...
Mr. Chairman, the witness is not being responsive. I ask that the chair direct him to answer the question.
I protest, Mr. Chairman. The nature of the question is such
that... In the opinion of the chair, the question is a proper one. Witness is directed to answer.
Can you deny such a possibility?
I neither deny nor admit it.
But you do not deny it?
No, I do not deny it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in view of the admission of gross inefficiency by the gatekeeper, in view of the fact that he cannot deny there's a possibility that subversive persons likely to be agents of a foreign power by taking advantage of the gatekeeper's laxness, if indeed it is mere laxness and not deliberate and treasonable coddling of such persons, have succeeded in infiltrating up here for the purpose of undermining our way of life. In view of these facts, this committee has no alternative but to reopen for complete and thorough investigation a number of cases.
I protest. This is a deliberate attempt to discredit the Immigration Service.
Chairman,
I insist that we proceed with the regular business of the committee.
May I remind the gatekeeper that he has temporarily relinquished the chair.
Mr. Chairman, I appeal to you. How much longer are the members of this committee going to tolerate these disruptive tactics?
The chair agrees that this committee has no alternative but to reopen a number of cases in order to determine the truth of the allegations which have been made. It therefore...
I will not be a party to any such undertaking. I will resign first.
If the gatekeeper feels that this is the only honorable course open to...
That is exactly how I feel. I'm resigning. You hear? I resign.
The committee will come to order. Let the record show that a full quorum of the committee is present. This is the first open session of this committee under my chairmanship. And I wish to announce the hearings on new applications will be suspended temporarily in order to enable the committee to reopen for investigation a number of cases in which permanent entry has been granted and where the committee has reason to believe there is evidence of disloyalty, actual or potential. Mr. Oates, who is our first witness?
Socrates.
Please state your full name for the record.
I am called Socrates.
Mr. Socrates, what is your occupation?
Philosopher.
Mr. Socrates, this committee has heard certain testimony in closed session. Concerning your activities, an accusation has been made against you to this effect, that Socrates is an evildoer and a curious person who searches into things under the earth and in heaven, and he makes the worst appear the better cause. Do you care to deny that statement?
While I have the life and strength, I shall never cease from the practice and teaching of philosophy, exhorting anyone I meet after my manner and convincing him...
Witness
saying that...
is not being responsive to the question. Mr. Chairman, I request that he be ordered to answer yes or no.
Witness will answer the question. Is this accusation true? And if so, are you still engaged in these subversive activities?
I do nothing but go about persuading you all, young and old alike, not to take thought for your persons and your properties, but first and chiefly to care about the greatest improvement of the soul. I tell you that virtue is not given by money, but that from virtue come money and every other good of man, public as well as private. This is my teaching. And if this is the doctrine which corrupts the youth, my influence is ruinous indeed. But if anyone says that this is not my teaching, he is speaking an untruth.
Oh, come on now, Socrates, don't hand me that. You know that's not an answer to my question. Unless you're responsive to the question, the committee can draw only one inference.
Acquit me or not, but whatever you do, know that I shall never alter my ways, not even if I have to die many times.
Mr. Socrates, your failure to clear yourself of the charge of subversion, although given a fair opportunity to do so, can leave no doubt in the minds of the members of this committee that granting you permanent entry was a serious mistake. Any questions, Mr. Oates?
No questions.
Mr. Torquemada?
No questions.
Judge Jeffries?
No questions.
Mr. Mather?
No questions.
Mr. Socrates, it is the ruling of this committee that pursuant to Section 28A, Article 4B, Paragraph 2 of the Internal Security Regulations, you be handed over to an officer of the Immigration Service for the purpose of deportation from up here to down there. Mr. Oates, do we have another witness?
We do.
All right. Please state your full name.
Thomas Jefferson.
Your occupation?
President.
Did you engage in any other occupation, Mr. Jefferson?
I was a gentleman farmer.
Oh, I'm not referring to that. Is it not a fact that you are an active revolutionary?
Mr. Chairman.
That in fact, you are one of the leaders of a movement which had as its aim the overthrow of established government by force and violence?
Mr. Chairman, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another.
Come on now, Tom. You know you're stalling. Just answer the question. You don't have to make a speech.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps if you made the question more specific, we all want to be fair to Mr. Jefferson.
Yes, your point is well taken, Mr. Oates. Mr. Jefferson, I hand you a statement purported to have been made by you in a letter to a Mr. William Stephen Smith. Will you read it, please?
What country before ever existed a century and a half without rebellion? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure.
Did you or did you not make that statement? If you did, do you still subscribe to those views?
If there be any among us who wish to dissolve this union, let them stand undisturbed as monuments of the safety with which error of opinion may be tolerated where reason is left free to combat it.
Who are you trying to kid, Tom? I've asked you a simple question. Why don't you cooperate with this committee? Are you opposed to the work of this committee? Don't you think this committee has a right to expose subversives like this Socrates? Now, where do you stand, Tom?
It behooves every man who values liberty of conscience for himself to resist invasions of it in the case of others. Or their case may, by change of circumstances, become his own. It behooves him, too, in his own case, to give no example of concession, betraying the common right of independent opinion by answering questions of faith which the laws have left between God and himself.
I think it's a waste of time to question this witness any further, unless the committee has some questions.
No questions.
Mr. Jefferson, it is the ruling of this committee that pursuant to Section 28A, Article 4B, Paragraph 2 of the Internal Security Regulations, that you be handed over to an officer of the Immigration Service for the purpose of deportation from up here to down there. Do you have another witness?
Yes, we do.
Then we'll proceed. Please state your full name.
John Milton.
Occupation? Poet. Have you ever engaged in any other activity, Mr. Milton?
For a short time, I was Latin secretary to the Lord General Cromwell.
I don't think that's quite accurate, Mr. Milton. Would it not be more accurate to say that you were one of the chief propagandists for a man who led a bloody revolution and later became a ruthless dictator? Is that not a fact, Mr. Milton? That was your chief activity, not poetry. Poetry was a sideline, wasn't it? You wrote political pamphlets, didn't you?
I did but prompt the age to quit their clogs by the known rules of ancient liberty. When straight a barbarous noise environs me of owls and cuckoos, asses, apes and dogs.
Strike that from the record. Now, you won't get anywhere, Milton, by insulting the members of this committee. Now, we're giving you an opportunity to clear yourself. Why don't you play ball with us, John? Why are you trying to protect this two-bit general, a man who is a disgrace to his uniform? Now, if you wrote these pamphlets on Cromwell's order, we can understand that. We understand you had some personal difficulties with Mrs. Milton. You probably needed the money. We don't wish to pry into your personal affairs, John. This isn't one of those star chambers like they used to have in your time. Just tell us where you stand in your own words.
Give me the liberty to know, to utter and to argue freely, according to conscience, above all liberties. And though all the winds of doctrine were let loose to play upon the earth, so truth be in the field, we do injuriously by licensing and prohibiting to misdoubt her strength. Let her and falsehood grapple. Whoever knew truth put to the worse in a free and open encounter, her confuting is the best and surest suppressing. For who knows not that truth is strong next to the Almighty? She needs no policies, nor stratagems, nor licensing to make her victorious. Those are the shifts and defenses that error uses against her power. Give her but room, and do not bind her when she sleeps.
Well, there's no doubt where you stand, Jack.
He's saying the same thing this Jefferson fellow said. All these fellows say the same thing.
Naturally, they say the same thing. They're part of the same conspiracy. John Milton, it is the ruling of this committee that pursuant to Section 28A, Article 4B, Paragraph 2 of the Internal Security Regulations, that you be handed over to an officer of the Immigration Service for the purpose of deportation from up here to down there. William Lyon McKenzie.
The drama to which you are listening is called The Investigator, and it first aired on CBC Radio in May 1954. I'm Michael Enright.
Let the farmer leave his husbandry, the mechanic his tools, and pour forth your gallant population animated by the pure spirit of liberty. Be firm and collected. Be determined. Be united. Never trifle with your rights. Strive to strike corruption at its roots, to encourage a system calculated to promote peace and happiness, to secure as our inheritance the tranquil advantages of civil and religious freedom, general content, and easy independence.
François-Marie Arouet de Voltaire.
Liberty of thought is the life of the soul.
John Stuart Mill.
If all mankind minus one were of one opinion, and only one person were of the contrary opinion, mankind would be no more justified in silencing that one person than he, if he had the power, would be justified in silencing mankind. We can never be sure that the opinion we are endeavoring to stifle is false opinion. And if we were sure, stifling it would still be evil.
Martin Luther.
It is neither safe nor prudent to do aught against conscience. Here stand I. I cannot do otherwise.
Baruch Spinoza.
Thomas Paine. It is the ruling of this committee that pursuant to Section 28A...
Oliver Cromwell.
Paragraph 2 of the Internal...
Giuseppe Garibaldi.
...that you be handed over to an officer of the
Victor Hugo.
...for the purpose of deportation...
Abraham Lincoln.
...to down there.
Good morning, Wagner.
And how are you this morning, Johann Sebastian?
Quite well, thank you.
Have you heard what happened yesterday? The
Please, Johann, no politics. Our little club is devoted solely to music. Shall we try the new quartet?
Chopin is not here yet.
Yes, I'm afraid he will not be coming here anymore.
Why not?
I have taken the liberty to ask him to resign.
How could you do such a thing, Richard? We have played with Frederick for ages.
I hated doing it. He is a fine musician, but we must be realistic. There have been certain rumors about Frederick. I don't believe them, of course, but in his youth he had certain political tendencies. And even some of the titles of his compositions, like The Revolutionary Etude... Well, I thought it would be safer not to be associated, you know, just until this blows over. And now, the quartet.
How can we play the quartet? There are only three of us.
I have invited someone to take Chopin's place. A fine pianist, a great musician.
Who, Liszt?
No. He was a friend of Chopin.
Schubert?
Oh, no. He was a friend of Liszt.
Then whom did you invite?
Otto Schmink.
Otto Schmink? I have never heard of him.
That is exactly why I have chosen him. No one has ever heard of him.
Pardon me, sir. That door is locked.
But this is my laboratory. It has never been locked before.
Sorry, sir. Orders.
But I'm engaged in important research.
My orders are that you are to be refused admittance.
Why?
You're a security risk. I'm sorry, Mr. Galileo.
But my research project...
That has been taken over by someone else.
Taken over? By whom?
Professor Schmink.
Oh, blithe newcomer, I have heard. I hear thee and rejoice, O cuckoo. Shall I call thee bird, or but a wandering voice?
May I express our gratitude to you, Mr. Wordsworth, for gracing our poet circle tonight. And now, we are privileged to hear some new poems by the author Percy Bysshe Shelley, one of our most distinguished...
Tennyson, no.
Your pardon, one moment. Yes, what is it, Coleridge?
Haven't they told you about Shelley?
No.
He has been under suspicion for some time now at the committee's bad as works.
Dear me, I didn't know.
Yes, it would be impossible for him to be here.
Yes, of course it was. Yes, of course I see the necessity. ladies and gentlemen, I regret to announce that Mr. Shelley will not be with us tonight. In fact, Mr. Shelley has been dropped from membership in the poet's circle. May I also say at this time that any opinions expressed by Mr. Shelley in the course of his association with our circle did not reflect the views of the other members. Now then, to continue. In Mr. Shelley's place, we shall hear a newcomer to our circle, the distinguished and inspired poet, Mr. Schmink.
Galileo.
Percy Bysshe Shelley.
Section 28A, Article 4B, Paragraph
Frederick
2
Chopin.
Of the Internal Security Regulations.
Ludwig van Beethoven.
An officer of the Immigration Service.
Johann Sebastian Bach.
From up here.
Richard Wagner.
Down there.
Otto Schmink.
Is that you out?
Yes.
Oh, come in.
I must talk to you.
I've just been going over the list of tomorrow's witnesses. Oh. Small potatoes. Oh. Can't we jazz the hearing up with a few names? I don't want them to think we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Oh. What's the matter with you, Oates?
Someone you'll see.
Who?
I'd rather not mention any names.
Mystery witness, eh? All right, bring him in.
No, you must go to him.
What? Are you kidding?
I assure you the matter is most urgent.
Oh, all right, I'll take your word for it. This guy better be important.
Believe me, he is. Come, just outside the main gate.
You're late, Oates. You know I don't like to be kept waiting, you stupid oaf.
Now, just a minute. Just a minute here. Mr. Oates is a member of my staff. I will not have a member of my staff spoken to in that fashion. I don't care who you are.
You don't?
Oh, I see. Oates, we must watch what we say. How do we know this conversation isn't being recorded?
You have my word of honor as one gentleman to another.
What do you want?
You must stop these investigations.
Are you giving me orders? Apparently you have some hold over Oates, but you're not running my committee. If you think you can put pressure on me...
Stop this orgy of deportation. Stop sending those crackpot reformers down there.
I will make no deal.
But you don't know what's been going on. Jefferson and Milton are calling for a Congress. Martin Luther and John Stuart Mill are making speeches about the rights of the damned. Cromwell and William Lyon Mackenzie have recruited a lost souls militia. That madman Socrates keeps asking me if I know what virtue is. Me! And that lunatic, Karl Marx.
Which Karl Marx?
How should I know? There are hundreds of them all over the place. Remember those pamphlets you handed them at their hearings? They took them with them when they got deported. They printed thousands of copies. And you know what their slogan is? Workers of the underworld, unite. You have nowhere to go but up. Now they've gone and organized a union. And they have the gall to want me to negotiate with them. Before I do that, I'll see them in... I can't cope with it. Stop the investigations. You're bungling it. There are ways of doing these things.
Are you criticizing my methods?
At first, they didn't take you seriously. Good. Then they began to be frightened. Good. They kept their opinions to themselves. Good. They stopped joining clubs. Good. They informed on their friends. Good. But you went on and on and on. Now they're beginning to ask themselves, maybe I'm next. Where will it lead to?
Nowhere. After my next hearings, they won't dare open their mouths. When I started, I said that I wouldn't rest until I had fixed the responsibility for thousands of years of treason. Certain personal investigations I've made have led me to an inescapable conclusion. Oates, you will issue the subpoena immediately.
For whom?
Who do you think? The chief. I am the chairman of this committee. I will decide who is to be investigated.
But you should have consulted the members of the committee before...
The subpoena has already been issued.
You must quash it.
There is no point in further discussion.
There is still time.
The subpoena will not be quashed.
This is madness.
You cannot investigate the chief.
You've gone too far. There is no one so high as to be immune from investigation where there's the slightest...
The chief is the supreme power.
There is no greater power.
This committee is a greater power. I am a greater power.
But he is the chief.
No, I am the chief. I am the chief. I am the chief. I am the chief.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Martin. Lovely morning, isn't it?
Beautiful. Glad to see you back on the job, sir.
Thank you, Martin. It's good to be back. Well, it's all over and done with. Now we've got to look ahead. We're going to have our work cut out for us. All these people to be relocated. Oh, dear, when I think of the paperwork alone. Oh, Martin. I have an interesting assignment for you. I think you're going to enjoy it.
A relocation?
No, a deportation.
I see.
Here is the file, and let us hope this is the last deportation we shall ever have.
This way, come along now.
I'm the chief.
Just follow me.
That's the question. Let me finish, please.
Easy, that's right.
I'm the chief.
Now, come
I'm
along.
The chief.
Just a little
that's
farther.
That's some question. Just answer yes or no. Right there.
I was expecting you, Inspector Martin.
Point of order.
And your charge.
Pursuant to Section 28A, Article 4B, Paragraph 2 of the Internal Security Regulations, I now hand over to you rejected applicant number 578293B021. That is all.
And the chief?
Not quite, Inspector. I now inform you that I refuse entry to the applicant.
You refuse? But you can't refuse.
I can, and I do refuse. I have certain rights, too, you know. You must give me my due, as the saying goes.
But you've never refused before.
That is true. In the past, I invariably prepared a warm welcome for rejected applicants.
Treason.
A very warm welcome. But I will not have him set foot on my territory. That is final.
But I can't go back with him. What am I going to do?
May I suggest you look up Article 35C, paragraph 4A.
Article 35C.
Mr. Chairman.
Paragraph 4A.
That's right.
Here it is. In the event that rejected applicant is refused entry down there after deportation, the inspector in charge is required to return said applicant to his place of origin at the point where applicant first crossed the border.
And chief.
Exactly.
It's incredible, Doctor.
Those are the facts, Mr. Garson.
He was the only survivor?
No doubt about it. Are you a close friend, Mr. Garson?
Yes, I am.
I think you ought to know, Mr. Garson. The crash seems to have affected his mind.
Well, after all, the shock.
It's a little more complicated than that, I'm afraid. He keeps babbling about being the chief and something about no one being too high and phrases like up here and down there. Completely irrational.
But he isn't violent?
Oh, no, quite docile.
This condition is temporary?
It's hard to say.
Well, at least his life was spared.
Mr. Garson, the plane crashed on top of a mountain, thousands of feet high. Yet he was found wandering about at the foot of the mountain.
Well, what of it?
The authorities say it's absolutely impossible for any human being to get down that mountain in the dark by himself.
It was an act of God, Doctor. An act of God.
The Investigator by Reuben Shipp first aired on CBC Radio in May of 1954. It was produced and directed by Andrew Allen. The Investigator was played by John Draney. Among the other actors were some of the top names of the day: James Doohan, Tommy Tweed, Barry Morse, Eric Christmas, and John Colicos.